Bore da. Croeso. Forgive me, my English brothers and sisters, for bringing you a greeting this morning in the middle of conference in your English Rugby World Cup in the Welsh language. Forgive me. Be people of grace, okay? Bore da. Croeso. Good morning. Welcome, one and all. My name is Steve. If we haven't had occasion to meet yet, I'm the chaplain down with Ospreys Rugby Region down in Southwest Wales. And I'm leading this next session, which is Mentality of an Athlete. And we've got some sports guys with us. We want to hear the stories of actual sports people. In the past, we've had administrators, just thinking about disability sport in Wales for a moment. A couple of conferences ago, we had the executive director of Disability Sport Wales address us. And that was great. And John is a great communicator, but he's not a practitioner. So we're thrilled that we've got two wheelchair rugby players with us today that have joined us. Give them a warm conference welcome. So nearest to me is David Anthony, and furthest away is Yayan Coombs, both part of the current Ospreys wheelchair rugby squad. I'm going to be interviewing them. This is how we're going to do this session. We're going to have a sort of interview-style session where I draw out of them the things that motivate them. What drives them as athletes who love this sport that is wheelchair rugby? I'm conscious that perhaps it's a sport that not many of us have ever come across. Perhaps you know nothing about it. These guys love the sport. You know, we play as a team in a league, and they'll come on and perhaps say something about their opponents in a short while. But they've been playing for varying lengths. You've been playing a long time, Dave, haven't you?
Yep. 9 years at the moment.
9 years. Yayan, what, a couple of years?
3 years. This will be my third season next year now. And hopefully won't end anytime soon. So wait and see.
Okay. So before we come on to talk about the sort of nuts and bolts of the game, I want to take you right back, really, in your life and just ask you some questions about what are your earliest memories of sport, your earliest experiences of sport when you were young boys?
Oh, that's a long, long time ago for me.
What are you, Dave, 24, 25?
25 now.
That's a long time ago. You whippersnapper.
I think the first time I did sport was when I was about 7. The local physios that I was doing in the children's centre in Neath decided to start a disabled football group. And I'm a big football fan, and I wanted to play football, so they decided, all right, then you can go on your hands and knees and go in goal and dive about all over the place and crawl. So that was my first ever memory of playing sport, and from there on it was kind of an addiction, and I'm hooked and I can't leave it now. How about you, Yayan?
Actually, it's probably one of the strangest kind of questions, because where I'm sitting now is very different from where I began. I actually hated sport for the first few years of my life because of my disability. I wasn't aware that I was able to compete. And it took 5 or 6 years, really, to find the first sport for me. I've always been massively competitive, always wanted to win. even if it was just catching a ball with my sisters in the garden, it would never end nicely. So I went through a range of sports. First, tried disabled football, similar to Dave, for Newport Dragons. And I think what I learned from that very early experience was that sport was going to be a way for me to challenge my disability, to be able to actually say, okay, I've got that limitation, but how do I work with that? How do I improve myself? How do I make myself better? And that was very much down to my parents. They knew that was going to be my area of challenge and of fulfilment in the end. And it's a remarkable journey because it started out as a participant, and I've now got a degree and work in sport. But it took a very strange start, really.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You've mentioned your disabilities, but not specifically. Let's sort of name the elephant in the room. Can you tell us a little bit about what your respective disabilities are, guys, and what that means for you?
I'm muscular dystrophy. or distal SMA, or whatever the doctors decide to put it down to. They don't have a clue, actually, to tell you the truth. Okay. So, you know, you may as well get a bag, put a load of disabilities in it, and pick one out for me at one time. So we'll have a crack at that, shall we? For me, it's basically, it affects, obviously, my legs. I can still crawl about the place and stuff, so I can still sort of roughly play football. My shoulders are missing a scapula at the back on both sides, and as you can see, they're very far forward compared to normal shoulders. And I do have joint weakness in my hands, but otherwise, everything else is pretty perfect. So,
right, okay.
Kind of lucky.
Okay, good. So muscular dystrophy is David's specific disability. Yayan, what about yourself?
I don't know. Mine doesn't sound that interesting, Dave. No. So,
so competitive spirit, guys. Competitive spirit.
Right. This I can see where this is going. If you want to take it that way, then we'll go that way. No, I have quadriplegic cerebral palsy. So what that is a oxygen deficiency at birth, which causes brain damage. So it means that the signals between my brain to my muscles don't operate at all, or if they do operate, they're somewhat distorted. So that means that I can walk, but I walk very short distances and often fall over, which, as you can imagine, with a beer in your hand is a difficult scenario.
It's entertainment for me anyway.
You know, and then it causes coordinational difficulties. So my right side is dominant. But my left side is pretty limited. And then as far as your eyesight goes as well. So, but I think the thing is with cerebral palsy is, you know, if you come into contact with an athlete with cerebral palsy, is listen to them. They can often tell you a lot about themselves because with so many conditions, I don't know if you agree, Dave, everyone is so different and the way they approach things is very different. So what I tell you today may be completely different to somebody else who has cerebral palsy.
Okay. So you've got different disabilities, but you play in the same team. Now, I know in the team as well you've got guys with other disabilities, double amputees, spinal injuries, quadriplegics. Guys out and girls out here might be wondering, how does that work in a team? You know, you've got different functions. If I was to say, who's the strongest out of the pair of you?
Rubbish.
Who's the fastest? You know, you've got different functional ability. Can you explain a little bit to the audience here how that works in terms of forming a team?
Well, first of all, I think we should test the strength out. Move the glasses out of the way. Let's get an arm wrestle going.
Perhaps at the end we'll have an arm wrestle, right? Okay.
Classification, right. There's four players on court, as you know, as you saw on the video, and we're all split up. It divides into 8 points. So those four players have to equal 8 points or less. We each have a classification that's based on muscle groups in our body, i.e. hands, arms, shoulders, trunk. And if you have got some leg use, that counts too. For me, for instance, I have the weakness in the shoulders, the weakness in the joints, and obviously I can't walk. The legs are pretty much useless. Technically not, but we'll leave it as that for them. And I have kind of blacked a bit of a less trunk than normal, but so that comes out as a 2.5 for me. But you can have a range from 0.5, and the max you can have is 3.5. So 0.5 is your weaker, lower range, which means the hand functions don't work, they can't really move their arms much, shoulders, trunk are all basically dead and buried, kind of thing. So you have to obviously split the points between the four. So a decent lineup would be 3.5, 2.5, 1.5.5. Yeah, that comes to 8. Thank God for that.
So you're a 2.5. What about you, Ian? What are you? You're a
I'm a 1 point. Player in the game, so basically that means that I'm a defensive player, so it's my job that to first inbound the ball, so I don't carry the ball as much on court, but I'm responsible for putting the ball in the first place. So if I don't do my job, we're stuck really. So my job would be to get the ball onto David, and then David would look for the space to score the goal. I always have a bit of a laugh and a joke, though, because the low pointers seem to do a lot of the work, to be honest. And the higher pointers just seem to have a bit of a whale in the park, you know, when they score the points. But no, I think that's the great thing about wheelchair rugby, is that I came into wheelchair rugby after being in athletics for many years, and being able to play on a court with four people with very, very different conditions, but you all having a major purpose to play, is fantastic.
Is it fair to say, Ian, that, you know, guys have watched that video there, and there's a lot of impact, a lot of collisions, a lot of, you know, bashing into each other, knocking guys out of chairs. Is it fair to say that it's more than just that? There is strategy involved, isn't it, in terms of the mix of classifications and defence and attack?
Oh, very much so. And I think, I'll be totally honest, it took me about a year and a half, possibly 2 years, to start to understand the tactics that are involved in the game. And the fact is that because there's only four of you on court, it's a big area to cover. So if one of you doesn't do your job properly or has a mistake, it can have catastrophic consequences. And it means that we have to work very much as a unit. Communication's a very, very important thing in wheelchair rugby. And there's also a lot of set plays. So people often think it's just about getting the ball from one end to the other. Actually, you have to make the clock work. So you have to sometimes run down the clock, or sometimes it's in your interest to score as quickly as we can. Obviously, if we're chasing a lead or something like that.
That's one of the things I've noticed as I've observed it is it, the best description I've heard for it is violent chess. Violent chess. There's a lot of strategy goes involved. And I go on a Tuesday and watch these guys train, and the set pieces and the strategy and the thought that goes behind it. It's not just a smash up. There's a lot of thought that goes on there, and the substitutions, the interplays of guys coming on, you know, to counteract the high pointer on the other side. It's a really engaging sport, but there is that violent element, obviously, which perhaps leads on to an obvious question of injuries. What are the typical injuries of a wheelchair rugby player?
Broken fingers. The worst one I've heard so far is a broken collarbone, where a guy was leaning forward to catch the ball and he fell on someone's lap and clipped the shoulder and broke his collarbone. But most of the time it's just broken fingers, maybe a dislocated joint.
It's
nothing for us. It's like, pop back in, please, get it done. There we go, let's go. I have had a couple of cuts to the head where I've fallen over and hit somebody else's chair. But again, it's more like, just take me up and let me go, please.
Tell us a little bit as well about the competitions that you take part in. You're in a league. There may be teams from towns and cities that people you're from. Who are the teams that you guys play against now as the Ospreys wheelchair rugby team?
So we play in a competition which is called the GBWR, Great Britain Wheelchair Rugby Super Series. And that is played over 3 weekends from November to March?
Yeah.
March. So basically what happens on those weekends is that we go up to Leicester or Stoke-on-Trent and we play 5 games over a weekend. So there are obviously some massive advantages and disadvantages of that. In a sport which is predominantly self-funding, it's very useful to get those games out of the way so that you know how much you're paying out, you know how much you've got to pay for travel, accommodation, etc. But also the toll on your body is pretty big. So some of the teams, obviously ourselves in South Wales, you've got Southampton. Southampton have got 2 teams, the Solent Sharks, Marauders, who are based up in Stoke Mandeville, the Bulls up in Newcastle. We had some quite titanic battles with them last year. So, any of you from Newcastle, if you can do us a few injuries and get it over and done with by the season, we'll look forward to that. But I think the great thing about the league structure is that, as I say, it's all in one place, so you're not just meeting one team. You get to meet all these different players from all different teams, and I think Dave would probably agree that I learn a lot from other players. Certainly as being quite new to the game, you ask people about their preparation and speak to people with similar conditions to yourself, and you say, actually, what works for you? Even down to the point of how much strapping do I put on my glove or something like that. So, yeah.
So you're relatively new to the game. Yeah. You're just 2 or 3 years in the game. So far, what has been the driving motivation for you, and what are some of the highlights for you?
I think this is always a very difficult question because people expect you to come out and say, you know, I want to win games. But it is thoroughly at the moment the enjoyment. I was very lucky, as I say, from an early age to be involved in the Disability Sport Wales Academy, and I threw shot and discus for Wales. And that was fantastic, but it was also very elite, and it was very, you have to succeed, otherwise there was a constant fear of cut of selection. And it was 2010 where I had been thrown at my peak, was looking at selection for Delhi in 2010 for the Commonwealth Games, and my classification changed, and overnight you find yourself, I've just trained for 7 years and they've all fallen apart. So it was about finding a new sport, and actually, I'll be totally honest, again, I hated sport for that moment. I couldn't see a pathway through, and I got involved in some coaching, and they said, you know, why don't you try some wheelchair rugby? And I thought, there's no better words than that for a Welshman that's grown up in Wales, loves rugby. So I thought, go ahead and give it a go. So it's the enjoyment.
And your highlight within wheelchair rugby since you've started?
It would have to be winning the Nationals in 2013 with what was then the Pirates that have now gone through to the Ospreys, but also playing in the 2014 Treat Trust Cup for Wales in front of my family. As I say, to get your Welsh cap as a Welsh lad, no better feeling.
Da iawn, well done. Okay, just going to pause for a moment there, because we're going to come on and hear a bit more about Dave's story. Dave's been playing a lot longer and has actually represented GB in the London Paralympics. I'm assuming, obviously, that's the highlight of your wheelchair rugby playing career. Can you tell us a little bit about the journey that got you there, that took you there?
It's quite hard to explain to everybody, you know. It was a mad 2 years at the beginning when I started. Obviously, I started in 2006 with the South Wales Pirates, which is now known as the Ospreys. And then I just played, was having a laugh, enjoying myself, you know, and never thought that in 2008, 2 years later after I started, I'd get a call out to Great Britain Wheelchair Rugby.
Were you a contracted player then? Were you a professional sports person?
No.
At what point did they take you on board as a contracted player at some point?
3 years later, okay. After I joined.
Okay.
Yeah, so 2008, I went down in December, literally 6 months after Beijing. Went down there, done a trial, and they were like, you're in. And then somehow, miraculously, I don't know how, I stayed there and all the way through to London 2012. I finally got my contract in 2011, a year before, which was a bit late, but it's there. And then I got the call, I think, about 3 months before London, going, you've made it. And we weren't allowed to tell anybody at the time, and I was driving the car with my mother in the car, by the side, sitting by the side of me, and I put down the phone, and obviously we're stuck in traffic, driving in the middle of the Neath, it's 3, 4 o'clock, and I just put the handbrake on and started bashing the wheel, screaming, yes, yeah, yeah, and mum's going, what? What's the matter? What's the matter? What's happened? And she's like, I'm like, I can't tell you, you've made it. She then goes to me, just tell me the truth, we made it, haven't we? And she was like, yeah. And so then she got out of the car in the middle of Neath, when the traffic's already moved, come round to the driver's door, and got in the driver's door and started hugging me and pulling me out the car.
That's a mother's prerogative, Dave. Enjoy that.
And all the cars are beeping behind us. I'm like, come on, man, we need to move now.
Tell us what it must have felt like, to that opening ceremony, walking out, representing GB at the Home Olympics. What did you feel? What was going through your mind?
If anybody's seen the cameras, I was watching the opening ceremony. It was me screaming at the cameras all the time. So you can tell what the feeling was. It was really a good feeling, an exciting feeling.
Sorry to cut across you, but it's obvious that you have done something that 99% of other wheelchair rugby players will never do. You've become a Paralympian. Can you tell us a little bit about what some of the sacrifices you had to make along the way? Because that just doesn't happen, you know, overnight on itself. What are some of the sacrifices you had to make yourself as an athlete?
The first one, like I said, is home. When you're an elite athlete, especially in wheelchair rugby, you don't have a home anymore. Mm. You're all around the country training. You drive 6 hours just to go to Norfolk for training, and then 6 hours back that evening. And you do it 3-4 times a week, so you don't really have home. You don't have time for family.
How did you handle that then? What were some of your support structures, Dave?
Do you know what? When I did get home, my mum was always there for me. My family would always find a way of popping in for 5 minutes, or, you know, making a bit of time just to come and see me, even when I weren't in the best of moods, because most of the time I come back from training and obviously driving 6 hours, so you're leaving about 2-3 in the morning and you're not getting back till 1-2 in the morning. The next day they come and see you and you're just like, kind of thing. So, you know, you're not in the best of moods when they do come and visit you. And they were just really, you know, kind of like, okay, we'll make this time, we'll find a little gap here. And my family has always been a very family-orientated, you know, every Saturday we meet up for dinner or we go to a park and have a picnic or something. And to be taken away from that for me was quite a hard thing. I used to hate going training. I'll say it, for the 4 years I did it, I absolutely hated going away to training and going everywhere.
Did your fellow players know that? Did they know that you were struggling on that front?
No, because that's a personal thing. I see that as a personal thing for me. Mm. I don't need to worry my teammates about that. Okay. That's something for me to fight my demons on. And I got through it and I did it. And, you know, I didn't let it show to anybody that I was missing home or I wanted to spend time with family and friends. It
must have been quite strange, really, living in these two separate worlds down in, forgive me for saying, because I live in Neath as well, parochial little Neath. Mm. Sorry, just dropped my mic. Little provincial town for a few days. The next minute, you're up in the big smoke up in London. You're in this ultra professional environment. You're having the elite coaches, you know, coaches for this, for that, for everything. That must have been hard to balance that in moving in those two worlds.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of, it was weird because you go to training and you've got all these elite people and, you know, your physios, your coaches, your nutritionist, and then you get home and you're just on your own. Mm. Mm. Sadly, for GB, there's not much of a Wales present or a Scottish present. So when you get away from England, that's it, you're on your own. Mm. Mm. So it was kind of like, okay, I'm on my own back at home, but when I go there, I've got this different environment where I've got to be different. I've got to act different, and obviously, when I first joined GB, I was an 18-year-old kid. All I wanted to do was go out and party and drink and have a laugh with my mates. So I learned to grow up very quickly.
And you were really in the limelight, weren't you? You were the face of GB wheelchair rugby. Did the professional environment help you for that? Did the media guys at GBWR, did they prepare you for that media onslaught? Do you have training in media awareness?
We had one training day, which was, admittedly for me, half hour.
Right.
But for me, media is common sense. You use your common sense, you're going to get through media fine. You don't say anything stupid. You say, the other team played better than us at the time, blah, 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 blah. Job done. You don't do a mic burn and say, we just played rubbish. We just didn't do it. You should have gone, Wales played better us at the time. Blah, 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 like we did.
Sounds as if you didn't listen much to the media guys, right?
No.
Did you listen any more to the sports psychologists within GBWR, you know, in terms of in terms of mental skills training now to get you in the zone on match day. What did they teach you? What did they encourage you to do to get yourself in that right place for you match day? What do you do? What do you do match day for preparation? What have you learned?
Well, first of all, on a sports psych, I didn't listen to them. I done my own thing instead, so that covers that.
And what is that for you then? What's your own thing?
There's a point of about it only takes me from difference from Yayan, for instance, and other guys, it takes them about a half hour to get up, whereas me it takes 5. So they're all in.
Why is that? That'll be interesting for the guys to know.
Different functions. I'm able to do things quicker. Able to do things myself, whereas people need help to get taped up, chucked in their chairs, stuff like that. So
you said 5 out. You meant 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
5 minutes. Right, okay. All right.
Instead
so
of
you can kit up a lot quicker.
Lot quicker. Right, yeah. Well, 25 minutes quicker. Okay. So
he did say 5 hours, didn't he?
Perfection takes time, over there, so.
Carry on. Sorry, on. Carry on, guys.
Wow. Really? Right, so yeah, it takes me about 5 minutes, but as soon as I get in the chair, it's basically the world is gone for me. Nobody else matters but me on my own, and I put my headphones on, I've got my music blaring, I'm singing songs to myself. You'll see me on court sometimes. If any of you come and watch me play a game, I'll warm up, and when I'm in the changing rooms, I'm singing songs, and I've got the worst singing voice in the world. But I'm just going around singing songs.
And what's happening in your head at that point? Where are you hoping to get to?
I'm just listening to music, singing songs. I'm not.
Right.
Rugby starts when that ball goes up in the air, okay. Not before. At the moment, I'm focused on getting myself warmed up, ready to go. And then also trying to keep myself cool, calm, collective, not think about the game too much, because then that puts more pressure on me, okay. Myself. So at that time, I've just got my headphones on, I'm singing music, pushing around the court, getting warmed up. And then as soon as that whistle goes and the ball goes in the air, then I'm switched on to the game. Then I want to start thinking about the game.
Which is interesting, because you were telling me, Ian, that your preparation, out of necessity because of your disability, is quite different, isn't it? Is that right?
Yeah, very much so. So that I learned from a very early age, at a very early point, in wheelchair rugby, that if I overthink things, my body will physically deteriorate because it'll tense. And with cerebral palsy, when you tense, you lose the range in your muscles. So automatically, that's a negative. It means that I have a very crucial job in the game of getting the ball into my teammates as quickly, but also as it has to be a good ball in. If we lose the possession, and we basically wheelchair rugby is normally we score, they score. So if you lose your possession and they get two, three scores up, that can be really hard to claw back. So how does that relate to my muscles? So that would mean that my muscles wouldn't be able to perform the inbound very well. I'd lose possession, and then it starts going in your head. So I learned very early on that I had to switch off. And the way I do that is usually when I go away on a weekend, I usually try and get up as late as I can, so I don't have a huge amount of time before the game to think. I then do the horrible thing of going on Facebook for an hour, trying to distract myself, and speaking to my family, and then have a little bit of breakfast, not a huge amount, because as you can imagine, you've got to get around the court very quickly, and if you've had an English breakfast, that's pretty hard as well. So my preparation in terms of game management starts from the minute I kit up. So the moment I get in my chair, the moment my gloves go on, that's when I try and switch on. And I think it's very important that you take mistakes as they come. I mustn't become too stitched up about mistakes. So, for example, one technique that my coach and I developed was that when I inbound the ball, is to take my hands off the ball for 2 seconds, take a breath, and then go again. So it's just building in those little routines that they'll work for you.
Yeah.
And sometimes we'll make a call as a team to say, right, if my head is going and if I am physically deteriorating, then we'll do a quick substitution. So I may be off for 2 minutes, just allow me to get that composure, and then return to the court then. Because if I'm losing my head, the thing I have to bear in mind is I'm not helping my teammates.
Okay.
So I had to learn that very quickly. And at the time, I had to learn some harsh lessons. I got sent off 3 times against England in my first international because of it. Mm. But I was saying to some guys last night, that's probably the best thing that's ever happened to me, because I learned very early on that the game management strategies for myself.
Guys, I want to ask if you'd be willing to just go a little bit deeper, a little bit more personal, if we could. Would you both be willing to give a personal example of something that's happened in your life, your home life, perhaps your family life, that affected your game and your performance for a while?
There's a couple of moments that affect my game. As much as I try not to get distracted, there is a bit when my family come and obviously watch me play, and especially at London. All my family's there, my cousin's kids are there, and, I'm in the middle of the game and I looking up the screen because the score's up there to figure out what's going on. And as I'm out on court, and I look up and I see my cousin's kids on the TV waving and smiling, and I'm obviously, at that moment, you'd think it would be a happy time for me, and it kind of wasn't because of it was difficult because I wanted my dad there, and sadly my dad passed away in 2005. With MS, and he was only 45 years old, and I go through sport, and I think, this is what me and my dad used to do. Mm. We used to be out the back garden playing football, and I remember I'm in goals once, and I'm talking to one of my friends who's by the side of me, and I'm obviously not paying attention to the ball, and next thing another ball's flying at me and completely hit me in the face, where my dad's kicked it straight at me and literally planted me on the floor. And that was always me and dad's thing. Me and dad used to stay up and watch the NFL every morning, and watch the Formula One and stuff like that. And every now and again I think of it, and I look, my dad should be here with me. Yeah. This is mine and his thing. It's not my mum's thing. It's not my brother's thing. It's not my sister's thing. It's mine and dad's. And obviously, you don't get that opportunity anymore. But I know he's with me in spirit, and that's, it's tough. But
thank you, Dave. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah.
Similar to Dave, there's always challenges in sport. There's always things that you have to overcome, and things for me were very, very similar. I used wheelchair rugby as a way of kind of challenging those emotions, and I think possibly everything was going so well. 2014, the season was going really well. Started with a really good win, I think. I think we played Crusaders in the morning, and we'd beaten them, which was a good start to our season, first game of the season. Comfortable victory. And that afternoon, I'd finished the game, so I was unkitting. And I had a phone call off my best friend to say there were police and ambulances outside my house. For some reason, not even then, do you fear the worst? Do you think?
Thanks, Warren.
you think, it's going to be something very simple, very, very easy to understand. So I made a phone call to my stepdad, and I said, "Is everything okay?" And there was what seemed to be a 5-minute pause, and he later told me that my mum had passed away in an accident at our home that morning. And all of a sudden that knocked you sideways. And actually my first response was, I want to continue playing, because at that time there was nothing that I could do. I was 3 hours away from my family. And I was very lucky to have Steve with me, and we sat and we cried a lot. And I think that affected my game for a couple of reasons. My mum was very pivotal in my life, but a massive supporter of me looking for sport as a way of challenging my disability and as a way of, you know, progressing. Even to the point of when I finished athletics in 2011, my dad was very much, right, you've had your competitive nature, you know, do you want to just look for something as recreational now? And my mum kind of backed me up and said, no, you're going to try something else. You're going to, you know, took me to training, bought my first kit, bought my wheels. I even remember a funny moment where she came to watch us for the first time and didn't quite understand the whole idea of not going onto court. The ball was coming down at some rate, and I was sat on the side. Then, and all of a sudden, my mum runs across, and I'm like, "Mum, you need to get off the court." Followed by our coach Jinx, who Dave will tell you, who's got a rather loud voice, going, "Will you get off the court?" As you can imagine, in slightly different in terms.
Very different.
For me, particularly in December and even the earlier months of this year, I didn't know if I had a future in wheelchair rugby. For me, that was, again, similar to as Dave says, that was mine and my mum's thing. And all of a sudden, I've lost that. But the thing that keeps me going is that I know that she will have wanted me to do that. She'll have wanted me to continue. And I can honestly say that, because I wasn't around my family at the time, but I was around the second best thing. I was around my teammates who understand. And from that day, you know, it was incredibly hard. But I would never want to leave this team again, because they carried me through the hardest thing that somebody can ever go through. And I'm forever thankful for that. And now, you know, it pushes me on. It pushes me on to try and achieve as much as I can, not just in my sporting life, but my personal life. And hopefully, I made a decision that my Welsh vest that I won actually went in my mum's coffin. So it pushes me on now to try and get another one to go up in my hallway next to hers. So it's massively important.
Thanks for sharing. Very, very personal things. We know that. And yeah, you don't need me to tell you, but your mum and your dad would be proud of what you've achieved in the game. And I'm sure what you will achieve. Perhaps we can turn just a little bit to the future. What do you think the future holds for you guys now in the next few years? You know, has the motivation changed since you've come under the franchise of a professional region? You're now Ospreys wheelchair rugby players. Has that galvanised your optimism, your motivation?
No, I think it's the same. I still want to win every game possible and still want to win championships. I won't be doing this otherwise if I didn't have that competitive nature. It's the future, obviously, you know, the short-term future is to build the club, a decent club, you know, get numbers in, get sponsors in, bring it a good old professional club, you know, and try and make it one of the first in this country, especially in Wales. And
practically speaking, that means promotion.
Yep.
In the first instance, from Division 2 to Division 1.
Hopefully, eventually, once we get the players and stuff like that, maybe that's a good chance on the cards. And then obviously keep going and then eventually be dominant in Europe and then over the world.
Personal international aspirations again for you? Is Rio a possibility for you?
Not for me. Sadly, the funds at the moment in wheelchair rugby are not enough for you to carry on training like you do and still be able to live a life kind of thing. Obviously I've ideas of moving out of my parents' house at some point and stuff like that, and rugby just doesn't let me do that, not international anyway. So that was put on a back burner. Maybe I'll pick it up again. If not, then hopefully...
He's got the talent, he's got the power.
If not, then hopefully Wales can... we can make a Wales team and then lead that to international glory.
Yayan, what's the future hold for you in the game? What are your hopes?
On a personal note, for me, it's to continue what I do, you know, in the sense of enjoying the game with a great team around me, you know. And that's not just the players. We've got a superb support staff, coach. We're very lucky to have possibly the best two coaches in wheelchair rugby that are our head coach and our assistant coach. So I think, you know, although I've been in there for 3 years, there's still so much to learn. And I think if you ever get to a point where you think you're a complete player, is the time you need to seriously consider retiring, because you never stop learning. Or you'll always learn something from the game. And of course, you know, I couldn't sit here and tell you I'd never want to put a GB vest on. It's what you dream of. It's what you aspire to. But central to that is enjoying it. If you enjoy what you do, then who knows where the opportunities may take you. And I think, keep working hard.
Next match?
Keep progressing.
Who's your next opponent?
We fly out to Italy next week on Thursday, innit?
Yep.
For an invitational tournament, an invitational game before we start our season. So we're looking to go out there and perform well. But as Steve will... I'm sure inform you that we all didn't go training on Sunday, and it didn't go down too well, did it, Steve?
Tore a strip off him.
So
terrible. Last training before international against Treviso, and he didn't turn up.
So yeah, we better get some training in before Thursday. Hopefully, we can perform well.
Who needs training? I don't prep. I said last night to people, "What's prep? What does prep mean?"
So they've come into a professional environment now, and the D word of discipline is obviously very new to them.
What's discipline?
Anyway, before we get into the Crispy Cups, right, let me open it up, because I'm sure some people out there will have some questions. I'm sure we've got about 10 minutes. I do want to finish by praying for these guys. But before that, questions for Dave and for Yayan?
It's obvious, but we didn't have a great camaraderie. Because of disability
or perhaps
despite disability, what's the camaraderie like between teams?
Actually, it's pretty good. We kind of have a thing of when we're on court, we're enemies; when we're off court, we're friends. I don't think there's any team that hate each other. There's no real rivalries or anything like that.
Apart from when we play England.
Except for when it comes to that, but you know, when we're playing in the league and stuff, yeah, okay, when we're on court, we want to try and battle each other and tip each other out of the chairs and beat them. But as soon as we're off court, we're back talking, friends, normally, nothing new, kind of catching up, seeing how things are going down their end. That's about it, really. No, I can't say it is. US don't really talk to anybody. They're a bit arrogant.
Sorry.
Hey, Dave. Be careful. Have you seen the size of John?
I know.
Stand up, John. Look at the size of him. Be careful.
Yeah, and you're going to be my blocker. You're my defender. But otherwise, pretty much everybody else is all right.
Very diplomatic, very diplomatic. Okay, let's leave it there. Another question from someone? Another question? Yeah?
I just didn't say, when you saw a lot of people tipping out of the chairs, is that a tactic?
Yeah, why don't you go for the answer? Go on, Yayan. Let's share it out.
I wouldn't say we don't always talk about the necessity to tip someone out their chair, but the tactic is to stop them. And I think there's a general consensus on the team that you do whatever you can to stop them. So you will try and hit them very hard, to hit them out of their chair. But also what you'll see on court is a lot of lines as well around the court. And obviously those are boundary lines. So if you can hit somebody over those boundary lines, it's either one of their players will get sent to the sin bin for a certain amount of time, or it'll give us an advantage by somebody being on the floor. Obviously, they can't defend or they're taking out the game, and then the game's allowed to continue even if someone falls. So I wouldn't say we don't naturally talk about it in training as hitting someone out, but we do have a thing which is called popping, where we'll put the ball into the circle and we will practice slamming into each other.
Okay. Perhaps one last question, perhaps.
You know, we've had it from the lads in Wales, especially in Australia, but I noticed with the Olympics, the crowd, you know, fantastic, seeing so many crowds. Mm. Has it improved since the Olympic Games? Are there more supporters coming now besides family members and friends? Has it increased or not?
No, not really. Sadly, the game's not really advertised as it should be, so people don't know about it. We try our hardest down in the Ospreys, don't we? We do advertise it quite a lot down our area, and we've seen a decent amount of numbers turned up to our home games, our friendlies that we've created. But as in for the league and stuff like that, it's just mostly family and friends.
Having said that, if you've been watching the Rugby World Cup on ITV4, you will have seen the adverts in the advert break for the first ever World Wheelchair Rugby Cup happening next week in the down period, in the week between the pool stages and the knockout stages where there's no able-bodied rugby. First ever World Wheelchair Rugby Challenge. 8 of the world's leading nations, including Britain.
Yep.
So the profile is growing, but what Dave says is quite right, at that grassroots level, they could do with more volunteers. They could do with a lot of help. They could do with a lot of funding. If they had a fraction of the money that went into able-bodied sport, you know, we'd be leading the world.
I'd be happy.
And I
that, yeah. Just ask the guys to explain, you know, the cost, a chair.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were talking last night, the biggest support behind the scenes, the welder.
Yeah. Talk about the welder. How much is your chair first? How much is your playing chair, Ian?
So a quote for my chair, or a fitting for my chair that I've just got, is somewhere between the region of £3,500 and £6,000. So, and that's for custom made chairs. But me and Dave were having a chat about it in the car on the way up. How are we going to afford to pay for Italy? So, each person will have at least one spare wheel, so that requires spare tyres, spare inner tubes, cloth tape, gloves.
Glue.
So you're looking, what, about £100-200 a tournament on new stuff?
Yeah.
So there are massive costs, and I think obviously for me and Dave, we are so passionate about the game, we love the game, that we will try and make cuts in other areas to allow us to continue to play. But it's certainly a hope of mine that as the profile of wheelchair rugby looks to grow, that we become affiliated with more regions and more teams get that sponsorship and that financial support. And of course, one of my main hopes from that is that people can enjoy, you know, not just provide support, but to enjoy being in that environment. You know, it's a superb environment to be in.
Martin was asking about technical support on match day. The welder.
Absolutely integral part of our team. Right from the bench staff who look after tyres. So if you have a tyre, they have 1 minute to change a tyre or a wheel.
Formula One pit stop.
It is literally like a Formula One pit stop. And then you have personal support. So for the lower point guys like myself, we need help getting into our chairs, taping up, gloving up. And of course, the support of a chairman can never go without question, can it, Steve?
That's right. Quite right.
Whipping us into shape as always.
Guys, I think we've run out of time just about. Can we show them our appreciation for being with us at the sharing?